I would like to ask you about this film you showed, Moussan, you pronounce it that way. Why was it dark like that? Was it necessary if the meaning was that this should not be released?
No.
The
extraterrestrial, you mean?
The last alien, yes.
No. It seems that according to Victor, the man who got this video from our Clinton Warren, these extraterrestrials are very sensitive to the ultraviolet light of our soul. He didn't explain why they are so sensitive, but it seems to be real. I say probably 90 to 95% of all the sightings of aliens alive have been done at night. They are very, very seldom during the day. If you remember in the autopsy, that I think is real, we see how they take these lenses from the eyes. The eyes seem to be very similar to ours, you see, but they cover them with these black lenses, and that way they are protected. And it seems, according to Victor, in the interview, I didn't present the interview because I have it in Spanish, I translated it in Spanish, I didn't bring it in English. But if you get the original video in English, you will hear from him saying that it was dark for the protection of the being, not for the protection of us. Besides, there was a window in the middle between the interrogator and the being, because it was isolated because of the batteries and the microbes that produce infections in the respiratory system. That's why.
Did you get any emission or absorption lines in the spectrum to indicate any elements?
The two first spectrographic images we managed to take showed the continuum of the spectrum. We used a black and white film, specially made for spectrographic measurements, and we couldn't see any strong emission lines or any line at all. Although we had very good equipment, of course you can always see emissions line, but it was not this spectrum.
I would like to ask the question in relation to how these aliens look like. Whenever there is a picture of them, they always these big heads, they're very small, they've got these big black eyes, you know, like small men from Mars. And still, there is one that which you mentioned, the colorless one, called the Billy Mayer, who took some very clear pictures and films of these spacecrafts. And I heard that he wrote a book, and I also heard that he had a very close physical encounter with these aliens, and the aliens that he described were just like us. They looked like us, but they were more beautiful than human beings, but they looked, they had the same physical autonomy like human beings.
I think
like our genetic cousins.
I think my computer can answer all the questions regarding the aliens from the Pleiades regarding to the Billy Mayer case. Just wanted to tell you that in Mexico, what we have been seeing in most of the cases are luminous beings, bright beings like the one I presented in the video. Not all of them were antennas or similar to that, but the similarity, what I saw was bright. These witnesses have told me too that many times they are transparent, almost invisible to the eye. Sometimes they are a little bit thin, but you can see they are translucent. You can see through them. I don't know why, But we know that there are animals like that in the sea. I just read a very beautiful article in, I don't know if it was Time Magazine or Newsweek, 2 weeks ago, where you, where they presented many transparent animals on Earth. I mean, this is very possible. And this is probably the same consistency of the beings that are being present in Mexico. Yes, there are many kinds, supposedly there are more than 160 kinds, different kinds of extraterrestrials. Most of them are small, big guys, as you say, the Martians. I don't think we should consider them Martians because I don't think they come from Mars. But at the same time, it seems to be this form the most predominant of all. However, there are some very important cases like the Billy Meyer case, like the Dansky case, and other cases, the Daniel Fry case, where they are related to us humans. And I think Michael can answer that.
Absolutely, there are four major types of aliens, especially in all of the world. One of them is indeed the group of the little gray beings, which were seen. And even in the past, we have statues found in modern-day Yugoslavia, and 7,000 years old Neolithic statues. We saw little beings with big flanking eyes, also in Sumeria, in the Obaid culture, 4,500 before Christ. But the second major group is the one which Bill Myers encountered with, and all the other contactees too. And which looks like us, and actually, you know, they could be here in the audience without you finding it out. And there are some young ladies here in the audience which are so beautiful that I suffer for that, yeah. And actually, they look a little bit more perfect than we do. And the first group is giant, 3 meters, 3.5 meters, like the one seen in Israel, Russia in 1989, and the Norwegian. And the fourth group is, as Jaime correctly said, beings of light which can materialize, which can take any shape or form they want, and come from small to big to perfectly human. And so I'm against labels. Some ecologists say, look, I mean, it wants to show Nordic, of course, good, because they are like the reasons, and the reasons are good. And the ones which are a little gray, they are bad, because they were different. This is xenophobia. I'm absolutely against any judgment. And yes, all of them were involved and served in all kinds of activities. And therefore, any judgment, any alien racism is absolutely wrong and dangerous. And you can only say, they definitely have a different origin, but they all, in one way or the other, are here in, let me say, common mission. Definitely many different
ones. Because what I said is, NASA accepted in April or May 1999 that there were at least 52,000 million galaxies, and each galaxy with 100,000 to 200,000 million. Suns or stars. What are the possibilities to find life in some other places? Besides, just in our own galaxy, there are more than 100 to 200 thousand million suns. That's us appearing the biggest possibility. They could come from so many different places just in this galaxy.
So, perhaps new dimensions. We haven't touched about the photon belt. And I'd like, if there was any comments from any of you to those two subjects. What about it?
I mean, what do you mean by new dimensions? Do you mean other dimensions? Because there are no new dimensions, only the dimensions we have to discover. Because, of course, all dimensions are here from the beginning on.
So this has been brought forward for the photon belt. Does that mean anything to you?
I heard about a so-called channeling or whatever, and however you want to call it, claiming that mankind and the global solar system is entering, passing through a kind of photon belt.
Yeah.
But I listened to it carefully and I looked if I had, if I get any confirmation from any other case, because if something like this is really happening, of course, you can't get it only from one source, but you have to get it from different sources. And I'm working on several companies, including Palisades, Billy Meyer, and so on. And none of them ever got any confirmation. So I'm not sure if I should really accept one channeled message from one source as the truth, especially because we know from the past and from checking out so-called telepathic messages, but very often they're heavily contaminated. And that's why people like Charles Adamski, for example, one of the very first contactees from the very beginning, was fighting against channeling and spiritualism, because we get so many wrong, misleading messages where subconscious fears and misunderstandings were playing the main role.
Well, I think we have to consider this very carefully. The Maya people said in the Pit 91 that this was the greater cosmic awareness. And into that we have seen that the Earth has become climate-wise changed. We get larger and larger typhoons, the weather climate changes, etc. So, if we consider this, we would have started our system into the photon belt in 1991, 1992, and then fully, I think, into the 2000s.
But I think it is very dangerous to see the cause of the climate change and all the catastrophes of the last couple of years outside, because it's very easy to say, look, we can't do anything, this is happening, we're entering the photon belt, and what can we do, and we can continue to pollute the planet, because this is not what we caused. We have to recognize that we are responsible for everything which is going on our planet, and we are the cause of the catastrophes of the last couple of years. We did it because of our our propulsion system, is because of our pollution of the atmosphere, and because of climate change, and because the greenhouse effect has caused the climate change, we did it. We are able to repair the climate, so to say. We are able to deal with the situation because we caused it. But we shouldn't look for cause outside of our own responsibility.
Yeah, and I can add that besides, we are responsible because there is no evidence of all the abundance of this carbon dioxide that it seems to be changing the climate. We have to recognize that many times the climate has changed naturally. Now they are discovering that 19 million years ago there was a big pollution of nitrogen coming out from the sea, and that killed many, many of the species. The problem here, the crime here, is that we have the most stable climate over the last 100 years. From 1890 to 1990 was the most stable climate, probably from the last glaciation more than 12,000 years ago. And that's the problem, that we broke that stability, because the climate is changing all the time. But we have, the climate was so good to us that we were able to make this civilization bigger, to make it grow, because it was so much food from the result of that climate that we grew very fast, and at the same time we created no problems. The problem here with the climate is that we broke the harmony, and now we are confronting a very unstable climate. It's so much cold, so much hot, so much rain, so much drought. That's the problem. It's so extreme now. And I think we will see much more about this. not many people have spoken about how warm is the Atlantic now. The Atlantic is suffering since the beginning of 1999, probably the end of middle 1998, because we don't have the data of very warm wars, very similar to what happened in the Pacific with El Niño. And we have been suffering the consequences, the hurricanes like Mitch, like Floyd, and others, the big storm in Europe at the end of 1999, the war in Venezuela, Brazil, Mexico in 1999, coming from the Atlantic. All these, the very warm winter you have now here is because the water in the Atlantic are very warm. It seems now that when the Pacific is cold, now it's cold, the Atlantic is warm, and all the opposite. When it's hot, the Pacific is cold, the Atlantic. We're just learning, we don't know. I'm not saying anything about the climate up until now.
I would like to add some details to my questions about our autonomy and that of supposed aliens. As Deneke has spoken of very often, in all ancient cultures, from Indian native cultures to Egypt to Greece, there are descriptions of the kingdom from heaven coming down to earth and teaching human beings how to construct things and giving human beings a language and culture and all that. And my question is, knowing how humanity has very difficult to accept even other colors of human beings, if these aliens were small gray men, I mean the ones that came to Earth to teach, if they were small gray, how could then our forefathers accept them as gods and accept them as teachers when they were so different? Isn't it more probable that these aliens would adapt or would resemble human beings so as to easier communicate with human beings in that age and teach them? And another thing I want to add is, Deneken very often mentioned the opening of the Bible where there's a sentence that goes like, let us create man in our own image. A statement from the gods, as the creators of the human race, and many in many ancient scripts, there's the descriptions of the gods mating with human beings, having children with human beings, so as to elevate the human race. So there must be a very close link between aliens looking exactly like us and those aliens who taught the human race.
Very long questions. Could you make a short questions? Because I think we lose it sometimes.
Yeah.
What's your question?
Very short is. Yes. The thing is that. The images that are shown in media, in comic books, everywhere, of how alien looks like, it's very stereotyped. And I'm saying, isn't it more probable, from what I've said, that the aliens that we really have to deal with are those who look like us, knowing our history, knowing what the ancient scriptures says. Let us make human our own image and so on.
You're completely right that most probably the main group of aliens which wasn't of mankind in the last whatever 6,000 years or more looked very much like us. And indeed we have some of the things where you read how the sons of the gods, the Bene Elohim, saw how beautiful the daughters of men were, obviously they came to Norway. And they were mating with them and created children. So to be able to create children, of course, there must be some kind of kind of genetic connection. Also, you quoted the Bible correctly, and if you know what the Bible is, we know it originates from the Babylonian and Sumerian way. You find it even more detailed in the story, and you find the reason why they created man, because they didn't say in the original Sumerian version, create man from the image, but they said, let's make it Uluwa Milu. And by mixing the being which already exists with our seed, and Uluwa Milu means the primitive worker. And so this socialist idea that you're all workers is true, and indeed this being is a mixture, a hybrid being between their seed and the monkey man existing as a type of erectus or scolopithecus or whatever. So the missing link is indeed this divine mother of the Sumerian mythology in Wurtha. And so you're right, I agree with you.
The status of the communicate through telepathy, or has it happened that they have spoken the language for the issue?
One word answer, both.
I'd be grateful if each of the panelists, and starting with the Norwegian team, actually, could say something about, for each of you from your personal perspective, what are your own hopes and dreams in your respective field and area of specialization? Where are you hoping to go now in the next year or two, with starting with the Norwegian team? Thank you.
If I understood you right, you wonder where my hopes were for the future, where to go from now?
Yes, that's right, and in relation to this whole field of inquiry.
Yeah, well, one of my hopes for this conference was that the official Norway should realize that this is more of a map in the rest of the world than it is in Norway. And I think we managed to do so by finding our community downstairs in one stand from representing Estal and then a new Norwegian UFO center up there. They're building one for 20 million Norwegian kroner. And I think that's a big leap in the right direction here in Norway. And I also hope that well, our efforts, NETIA and UFO Norway's combined forces will bring results in that direction. So we'll be able to find out more, maybe have some more time to investigate, and maybe have some more economic or financially groundings for it. I hope that the conference will go out even, but I'm not quite sure yet.
Well, I can make some comments too. I believe that we know only a very small part of our world, and it isn't difficult to see that is true, because in the way we destroy something and everything like that. If we get more information or a better understanding on how everything is functioning, then we might have a better chance to do the right thing. I think that most of what we do is because of lack of formation. That's one thing, and if we become more open and see the signals, we're going to see the signals everywhere, and listen to it, it might be that we can get the right information. Together with investigation, of course. I think also that when we have a lot of stories, that experiences that people don't dare to say because it's not allowed to say it. I have a good in Hestown when we have made this life phenomenon more common or more possible to talk about, then many people after that has come up with their stories which they have never told to anyone before. They have kept it for themselves for 50 and 60 years, never told anyone, because they was afraid that they should be laughed off. And if this will continue, then a lot of experience in our world that would never come true. And I think it's important that we make it possible for people to tell their stories and also take it seriously. And if we do that and get the information, and together with the scientific research, which is done now, in fact, in US Society of Scientific Exploration, European, and so on, which do a very great job in that part. Then we will have the possibility to make a better book.
Well, what I want to remember, I am a journalist, what I want is to find the evidence of this reality, is something that is undeniable. We're going to look for it in the very near future. We're going to make some expeditions to a place where we have found many reports from these beings, and I think we have a good chance to produce probably the best evidence ever. Let's see, we have the patience and we have the strength to do it, not for 1 year, but for many years if it's necessary, and that's what I expect. And I hope that with this new reality, as I said at the end of my speech, of my lecture, is that we will change and we will give a chance to those who haven't been born, because those with their merits, what we do or we don't do. And I believe there is a connection between the environment and the presence of these beings. If we don't take care of the environment, then the environment is going to take care of us. We won't have this chance. We will have the possibility to create this dream possible. I really liked Joe Ferber's presentation yesterday through satellite, especially at the end when he said that we might say to any kid that is going that, you know that you could be one day in a different planet, and this is serious and it's possible. And this is what it's all about. I've been involved with this phenomenon because I want to create conscience through this. That's all that matters to me. I believe we have a future, an incredible future. I think we are in the year 2000, and the year 2000 and the third millennium is going to change humans, because it's a concept, and we are now inside the concept, and the concept is the future. And we have the chance now to create new values, and that's what it really matters now. And I hope this new phenomenon, I hope the investigations over the next years, over the next decade, especially in Mars, in the moon Europa, in Jupiter, and with the telescopes that we are going to look for oxygen in the new and recently discovered planets, with all that we will create an awareness, and I hope that awareness will be useful to do something for the future, for the next generations, because for me it's all that matters, you know. I think this world for the adults, for me it's more or less over, but for the future, we won't be the last generation on Earth. There will be many others. There will be kids and the kids of the kids and the children of the children and the grandsons from the grandsons. And I think that's what we should look. Stephen Greer told me we should look for the next seven generations. That should be the obligation, the duty for any human being after from any moment in history. And I think he's right, and I think that's the real point in the investigation of this phenomenon.
I think we have to realize that the subject we are dealing with can change the world as nothing else. I mean, we are not dealing with some kind of strange, spooky phenomenon like poltergeist, Loch Ness monster, trolls, or whatever, but we are dealing with something which has the potential change our world and history, like then in the last 2,000 years, and I have a reason why I say 2,000 years, or 1970 years, and I think that's why it is extremely, extremely, extremely important, because it can teach us a lot, it can open new gates, and it can help us to avoid the mistakes of the past and to enter a brand new world. That's why we really have to take, especially us who know the truth because we investigated it all our life, but we have to deal with it very responsibly and put our means and efforts into communicating and revealing the truth. And if you ask me personally what I'm doing in the next couple of months, in 2 weeks I'm going to India to document a very interesting and remarkable case and a very interesting remarkable UFO contact case, and the Billy Meyer case. When he was in India in 1964, a world Buddhist monastery saw him and the extraterrestrials walking around, and the head of the Buddhist monastery was even talking to the extraterrestrial. Very interesting thing. Especially if you also have the Buddhist connection, the religious connection, whatever. We will continue, all of us, to collect and spread the evidence. 350 years ago, the reason why Galileo Galilei had such a hard time was that no one was willing to look through the telescope. So we really have to throw it in the public. That's the reason why we are doing all this. And why we are making television programs, conferences, magazines, videos, research projects, whatever, to find out the truth and to make it available for you, because it is always good to be prepared for the future and to realize what will be your future, your children's future, what potential or possibilities we have, and to take this great challenge that challenges all of us deeply, deeply serious.
I was wondering, these sages, how fast do they go? And are they involved in some system or in another one? And how many years do they use from, let's see now, Pluto to the Earth, if they go twice the night?
Look, they don't even travel at the speed of light. They travel beyond the three-dimensional time-space continuum. So they can do it from Pluto, or even from the Pleiades in zero time, because the place where we go, there's no time anymore. Mm-hmm. And where they come from? Far away, not from this solar system. Maybe they have bases on the moon, or maybe they have bases wherever. But they don't come from the solar system. Some of them come from other galaxies, maybe. In their time-space continuum where they live, they do, but when they travel, they enter another dimension. Beyond the time-space continuum, beyond the fourth dimension time, first three-dimensional space and the fourth dimension time, enter this zero-time dimension and enter the three-dimensional transverse continuum again in the location where we want to go. And Steve Greer spoke about it in his lecture, Joel Roberts mentioned it in his presentation, and it's too short a time now to go into details, but I can only tell you there are lots of very good, very brilliant works by very famous physicists. I'm not a physicist, I'm a historian, and that's my background, historian, cultural anthropologist. And they're more competent to explain to you, but I can tell you the principle. And the principle is they don't go linear, in a linear way.
Thank you. Understood what he said, significantly more confident. I took the chance, I think I will never again have this opportunity as I have today.
to ask the question as a person E for an incumbent. Would it be possible for a beautiful captain to come down to the earth and lay the body idle and take the sword and take the soul of the evil audience? For me it has happened in a sort of dream. And the beautiful captain said that I will show you a little bit of the history of the earth, the planet. And see if you can fly out and you can catch all the rays and the history of the world, because the ray is on the way up in the orbit, so we can fly up, pick it up like a TV camera and show it. She said that, no, look here, you have a float, and you see the ice cube float there, and you see the ice cube float here, you see a little bit, and then you will see a enormous big vulcan break in at the bottom, and then you see a very big mountain chain, and then the seawater comes into the side. So from the seawater you see the enormous big vulcans coming up, split that ice cube in two, the one striking up to a quantum times the gravitation, and the orbit starts to drag the galaxy, as on the axis of the world, so they keep on a little bit. So you see that sea now, when the seawater comes into that big crowded and they come out again. The question comes in later, because that is 10 of the questions of us. And then you see how enormous taste it comes up and it flows around like an enormous cloud coming back to the earth, bringing 273 degrees minus down to the earth, decrease everything. After I had this dream, it lasted 6 hours. 2-3 months later, Russian archaeologists dig up some mammoth elephants. And then we find out the meat is still going strong from Egypt. So then that is the first part of my question. What do you think? Is it possible for the UFO captain to take the soul out of the body and the body make it and travel around? So that was the first evidence that it is possible. The next evidence is UFO captain say that out in the orbit there is two powers, the one from the neutron, the one from the ion. Neutron is what you call the Satan, ion is what you call the God. But we call it ion and neutron. And they are two powers we have been fighting from the beginning of the everyone's beginning, and I've been fighting all the time. Ion wants to build up the power, the energy.
Unfortunately, we ran out of tape in this part of the question round. In some time in the future, we may be able to lay out rest of this question round on the internet.